As Unitarian Universalists, we draw our wisdom from many different sources. And today, we explore the question, why did the chicken cross the road?
From the Taoist sage Lao Tzu, the road can be crossed is not the true road.
And from the Buddha, if you ask this question, you deny your own chicken nature.
And from Star Trek Captain Kirk, to boldly go where no chicken has gone before.
And from John Lennon, imagine all world's chickens crossing roads in peace.
From Dr. Seuss, did the chicken cross the road? Did she cross it with a toad? Yes, the chicken crossed the road, but why it crossed, I've not been told.
And from Martin Luther King Jr., I have a dream that one day all of God's chickens, chickens of every color and faith from every village and every hamlet, will be free, thank God Almighty, free at last to cross the road without their motives being called into question.
And from Thomas Jefferson, all hens are endowed by nature and nature's God with the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of the other side.
There endeth our source readings. So one Sunday morning, the minister noticed that a little boy was standing and staring up at a large plaque that hung on the wall. And at the back of the sanctuary, the young man of 7 years old or so had been staring at it for some time, and so the minister walked up and stood quietly beside him. Gazing at the plaque too, she said quietly, "Good morning, Billy." "Good morning, minister," replied the boy, not taking his eyes off the plaque. "Minister, what is this?" "Well, these are the names of all the people who died in the service," replied the minister. Soberly, they stood together, staring up the large plaque full of names, and little Billy's voice barely broke the silence when he asked quietly, "Which service, the 9 or the 11?
From Appalachian Humor by Loyal Jones. A missionary came into the mountains to see how many people he could save for the Lord, and from a way of life that he had read about in novels. He spied an old man sitting in his front porch enjoying the afternoon sun. He went up to the man's yard and without saying as much as a howdy, said, "Brother, are you saved?" "Why, no," said the man. "I've been living here for 40 years. "I mean, have you found Jesus?" asked the missionary. "Now, I didn't know he was lost. The Bible says he's in heaven until he comes again. What I mean is, are you a member of a Christian band?" "No, but there's a Jed Christian who lives about 5 miles over the ridge. My question is, are you ready for the judgment day?" "When is it?" "It may be next week, it may be next year. We don't just know." "Well, when you find out, you let me know. My old woman may want to go both days."
How many Unitarian Universalists does it take to change a light bulb?
How many?
Thank you. How many Unitarian Universalists does it take to change a light bulb?
How many?
None. You just think the light bulb should change by itself.
There were two evil brothers. They were rich and used their money to keep their ways from the public eye. They even attended the same church and looked to be perfect citizens. Then their pastor retired and a new one was hired. Not only could she see right through the brother's deception, but she also spoke well and true, and the congregation started to swell in numbers. Soon, a fundraising campaign was started to build a new assembly hall. All of a sudden, one of the brothers died. The remaining brother sought out the new pastor the day before the funeral and handed her a check for the amount needed to finish paying for the new building. "I have one condition," he said. "At his funeral, you must say my brother was a saint." The pastor gave her word and deposited the check. The next day at the funeral, the pastor did not hold back. "He was an evil man," she said. He cheated on his wife and abused his family. After going on in this vein for a small time, she concluded with, "But compared to his brother, he was a saint."
A woman invited some people to dinner, and at the table, she turned to her 6-year-old daughter and said, "Would you like to say the blessing?" "I don't know what to say," the little girl replied. "Well, just say what you hear your mommy say," the woman said. It's never a good thing to say. The daughter bowed her head and said, "Dear Lord, why on earth did I invite all these people to dinner?"
A mother was teaching her 3-year-old son the Lord's Prayer. For several evenings at bedtime, the little boy repeated it after his mother. One night, he announced that he was ready to go solo. The mother listened with pride as her son carefully enunciated each word right up to the end. "And lead us not into temptation," he prayed, "but deliver us some email. Amen."
How many UUs does it take to screw in a light bulb?
How many?
We choose not to make a statement either in favor or against the need for a light bulb. However, if you, in your own journey, have found that a light bulb works for you, that is fine. You are invited to write a poem or compose a modern dance about your light bulb.
Did you hear about the latest UU miracle?
No.
Someone saw the face of Ralph Waldo Emerson on a block of tofu.
Oh, for fun. Good to laugh at ourselves now and then, right? I was looking into different people and what they were saying about humor and the importance of humor, and my favorite was Reverend Howard Thurman. And he said that, you know, so often we take life so seriously and we see humor as something that can be inappropriate or irreverent. And we gotta be careful because the humor that we use can sometimes be self-devaluing, where it can make fun of others. But humor at its best, when it's done well, helps us go deeper into the work that we do. One of the things I loved about our covenant workshop yesterday is that with all the seriousness and debating back and forth and all the conversations, there was laughter all day. There was laughter all day. We broke into small groups, and I'm sitting in my office, and every once in a while I'd hear a roar of laughter, which, you know, when you're talking about the relationship between the board and the members, you know, either that's a good or a bad thing, but it was nice to hear laughter, right? It's an important part of our lives and our work. As a Unitarian Universalist starting off in professional work, I was a religious educator for a few years, and one of my responsibilities is work with the coming-of-age group, which is 8th graders who are getting ready to make a commitment and think about what they believe and all of that. And every year, at the end of the year, we would do a camping trip between the middle schoolers and the coming of agers, because we wanted to make sure that there was relationships built across. We also did one with coming of age in high school and that. Well, somehow, in the course of this trip, I got landed with 2 middle schoolers I didn't know, because I wasn't responsible for the middle school program. And we get into the car, and we have an hour and a half drive ahead of us. And I know it's a bad sign when the kid in the front seat immediately puts on his headphones. I think, this is going to be a long trip. Right? You know. And the other kid in the back, who's one of my favorite queer young adults ever now, but was, you know, kind of a troublemaker, but he didn't know me, and he wasn't sure what was going on. And the other kid had put his headphones in, and so he just kind of sat back there and read his book. And at some point I go, "Friffle, Kermupolo, what?" The kid in the back, what are you saying? You know, and I just started inventing silly words. Now, I have many of you have heard me say silly words in response to things. I say friffle nerf quite frequently. And so I just took this advantage of this tendency to invent words to try and get their curiosity, because I knew that particularly with middle schoolers, if you act silly, if you're willing to make an ass of yourself as an adult, they're willing to listen to you. It's a pretty miraculous thing. And so I just started saying silly words. I'm like, no, that doesn't sound good. I'm like, hey, can you write this word down? And so the kid in the front seat is now writing down words, and the next thing you know, they're helping me make words. And by the end of the drive, we have a whole new language that really only the three of us could speak. But the thing that I note is that the humor is what broke the ice. I could have just been the serious adult driving the car and ignoring them too. I could have said, hey, take the headphones out of your ears. That's not cool or polite or whatever, but that would have just ended the conversation. In that moment, the thing that created conversation between total strangers and ultimately of friendships once they became adults was humor, was laughter, was silliness. Silliness can feed our souls. It can guide us in our relationships. It can give us connection and hope. Any Eddie Izzard fans in the house? Yeah. Eddie Izzard's one of my favorite. I struggle with comedians because so often they make fun of a people as a way to do their humor. And I'm not so comfortable with that. One of the things I like about Eddie, one, he's a transvestite. When he's a transgender person, I'm good with anybody who's a transgender leader in the world. You know, and he walks in heels 10 times better than I ever could. And he looks great in a dress. So, you know, he's doing his show, and he likes to make fun of religion. You know, in England, religion's this thing. And so he says, you know, the Church of England, you can't take things seriously in the Church of England. You know, the Inquisition would never have worked. You know, they put somebody on the rack and start tightening. They're like, it hurts. Oh, we'll loosen it up a bit. You know, we don't want to hurt him. You know, can't take strong stances in the Church of England. It's not like we say you have to have cake or with a vicar or you die. And then, cake or death, right? And so he's like, you know, acting like the minister. Would you like cake or death? Cake, please. Okay, piece of cake for you. Next person, cake or death? Cake for me too, please. He's like, well, we better not have too many more people. We're gonna run out of cake. Wasn't expecting such a rush. Next person's like, cake or death? Death. Oh, I mean cake, please. Ah, you said death, you know. So he's doing this whole skit, right? Making fun of religion, but at the same time, connecting people to kind of a sense of silliness and wonderment. And being honest about the Anglican Church, which, by the way, yeah, is very much like, you know, can't sing, we're hanging out together kind of stuff. And just being honest about the world and having difficult conversations. Silliness helps us connect in ways that we can't imagine, but it also makes the work that we do easier. Any of you take yourselves too seriously? I definitely have my days. Anybody not take yourself seriously enough? I definitely have my days, you know. But one of my comments is I like to say, there's too much that needs to be taken seriously. I refuse to be serious when I don't have to be. Humor can be a spiritual practice that helps you connect with the lighted heart part of yourself. It's a stress reliever. People who laugh have fewer heart attacks. They let go of stress. They live into the world. And it also helps us have those difficult conversations that we may not be always able to have. And so when I go back to that Howard Thurman and thinking about the important spiritual aspect of humor as a way to do the hard work, to have the difficult conversations. I think it's amazing that Larry Wilmore's show is coming out right at a time when we're having these difficult conversations about race. And so he can have these comedic conversations in a way that become relatable and can help us move to a different place of understanding and hope. And we need more of that. We need more creative humor, more silliness in our lives, because the minute we start taking ourselves a little too seriously, things tend to fall apart, and we tend to have a harder time hearing each other. So I advocate humor. I advocate humor that is kind and compassionate, and I say, let us be silly together. So I'm going to invite you into what I call a laughing meditation. Some of you will remember we did this not long after I first got here. And one of the things that I know about laughter is that it's contagious. And you may be like, I don't want to laugh, Sunshine. What are you talking about? And you may even be totally resistant. I just ask that you go with it. And so I just want you to say, ha. Ha, 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 ha. Keep going. And stand up as your body's spirits allow. Some people just jump right in. Well done. All right, I want you to laugh at the top of your lungs. Keep going. I'll tell you when to stop. Keep going. It's really spectacular. All right, now stop. Ah. Please be seated. It's my favorite part when you ask people to stop and they can't, like, yay. And so, the last laugh.
On board the starship Uniprise, while traveling by Earth, the crew responds to a distress call from a lost UU Association outpost. Captain Kirk asks, "Mr. Spock, what can you tell me about these people?" Spock replies, "The library computer has little information, Captain. Logically, however, we may deduce from their name, Unitarian Universalist, that since Unitarian means one, and Universalist means everything, that these people believe in one of everything."
Not far from the truth. We do not, however, believe in everything. All right, Jesus and Satan have an argument as to who is the better computer programmer. This goes on for a few hours until they agree to hold a contest with God as the judge. They set themselves before their computers and they begin, and they are typing furiously, lines of code streaming up the screen for several hours straight. Seconds before the end of the competition, a bolt of lightning strikes, taking out the electricity. And moments later, the power is restored. And God announces that the contest is over. He asks Satan to show what he has come up with, and Satan is visibly upset and cries, "I have nothing. I lost it all when the power went out." How many of you have been there? "Very well," says God. "Let us see if Jesus fared any better." Jesus enters a command, and the screen comes to life in a vivid display. The voices of an angelic choir pour forth from the speakers. And Satan is astonished. He exclaims, but how? I lost everything, yet Jesus' program is intact. How did he do it?" And God chuckles, "Everybody knows. Jesus saves."
For the members of any religion, to have a few doubts is normal. To have many doubts is a crisis of faith. To have constant doubts is to be a Unitarian Universalist.
Little Sammy was studying for his bar mitzvah, and one day his mother asked what he had learned in Hebrew school. "Well, Mama," said Sammy, "the rabbi told us how God sent Moses behind enemy lines on a rescue mission to lead the Israelites out of Egypt. And when they got to the Red Sea, he had his engineers build a pontoon bridge, and all the Jews walked across safely. And then the Egyptians followed, and Moses used his walkie-talkie to radio headquarters for air cover. And they sent bombers to blow up the bridge and drown all the Egyptians, and the Israelites were saved." "Now, Sammy, is that what the rabbi really taught you?" his mother asks. "Well, no, Mommy, but if I told you what the rabbi did say, you'd never believe it."
In Of Human Bondage, Somerset Maugham said, "A Unitarian very earnestly disbelieves almost everything that anybody else believes. And he has a very lively, sustaining faith, and he doesn't quite know what."
That's an actual quote. That's the really best part of that. Three children were just saying. Have to clarify in this part of the world. Three children were talking about their religions. "I'm a Catholic," said one, "and our symbol is the cross." "I'm Jewish," said the second, "and our symbol is the Star of David." The third child said, "I'm a Unitarian Universalist, and our symbol is a candle in a cocktail glass." Yeah. Apparently that resonated.
Apparently that was a good one. From The Simpsons, Bart is playing Billy Graham's Bible Busters, in which you zap people and convert them to Christianity. Bart is really getting into the game, and after zapping a guy, he exclaims, "All right, I got him." Ned Flanders boy reply, "No, you just winged him. Now he's a Unitarian."
What is a Unitarian Universalist?
What is a Unitarian Universalist?
Someone who believes in life before death. Also true. What is a Unitarian Universalist?
What is a Unitarian Universalist?
Someone who approaches every question with an open mouth.
How many Unitarians does it take to replace a light bulb?
Many Unitarians.
None. You can't replace light bulbs with Unitarians. They complain too much when you try to screw them in.
Why are Unitarian Universalists the worst hymn singers? Because they always read ahead to see if they agree with the next line. And so with that, I invite you to rise as your spirits and bodies allow, and join in singing, coffee, coffee, coffee.